trying to be harsh.
No, no, I'm just saying that we all, as individuals, walking down the street, shopping in the supermarket, let's bring it down to a very practical level. When we pay our money to the checker, that checker and ourselves is experiencing something. Every person, every thought, everything we do, everything we say, every individual we meet has something to offer us if we are available and open to that. Do you understand what I mean? So, indeed, we are all each other's teachers if we could just see that.
You do have to have a teacher, from whether it is a book or whether it is a guru, or to start the wheels of perception working in your mind. Now, you may be able to, out in the stream, figure it out all by yourself.
Yes.
I can't.
But the chances are you may need a little jump start there.
But the greatest teacher, it's been said, is nature itself.
Right.
The beauty of nature.
I've had a lot of teaching from the program. I heard about T. Henry Morey and Nikola Tesla and the Bedini machine and things that... And when you were talking about the master electrician and the chemist and the rest, I relate everything that the alchemist did back to what we call science now.
There you are.
And it all comes around in a cycle. So I'm not trying to say that I'm a perfectionist, and I'm not really putting it down.
No one thinks you are, Warren.
I'm trying to pose a question because I see a problem.
Well, I don't think when you listen to someone or you read anything, we have to, all of us have to take what we hear, what we read, assimilate it, absorb it, experience it, and choose for ourselves if it's within what we want as our repertoire to keep with us. If we don't, we discard it. We take the essence of the lesson, and it's finished. It's been said that when the lesson is learned, the necessity ceases. And I think we all can reflect back upon our lives and realize that many, many times we make the same error again, whether it's in judgment or decision or whatever. Because sometimes it's very easy to fall into a groove of what's comfortable. And it's very hard to change an outlook or acquire a new perspective. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. And I appreciate you taking the time to speak with me. If I could ask a last question.
Well, it's a good question, and we have to run on. Make it very quick.
The Bedini machine, has that moved on?
Oh, yes. It's running along.
Good.
Okay?
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. I'm Bill Jenkins. It's Open Mind on a Saturday night. With me is Kerry Williams, and we're talking about reincarnation.
To them, quite awesome. And may I speak to Kerry, please?
I am right here.
Thank you.
It's more fun to talk to her than me.
A couple of years ago, I was in a class. The teacher was teaching us reincarnation, or telling us about it. And I did go under, and when I related how I saw myself, which was in Russia, and how I was in a sleigh going to this great big ball. And I even described myself, and I was a doctor, and I was married to this officer in the Army. And I described the details of the ballroom and everything. But what bothered me was that he told me I had a good imagination, or that I could write a book. And I really saw all this and saw myself there. And I was wondering, I feel that you're very qualified, and I wanted to ask what you thought about
this. Well, let me ask you very quickly, Lil. Now, this was something that you just perceived all by yourself without any kind of inducement.
Of course.
Not going into any kind of regressive state at all. It just came to you. You were able to somehow or another break down these barriers.
Well, let's clarify. When you said you went under, what do you mean by
that? I was in meditation or hypnosis or whatever you want to call it.
Ah, you were being hypnotically regressed.
Right.
Okay.
Well, I did it myself. Nobody was doing it to me.
Right. You,
well, that could happen.
After you took this class on reincarnation, did they teach you how to do this?
No, he just brought it up, like that he had once been whatever he was, a monk or something.
Right, but the steps for you to go under, you did all on your own, is that it?
That's right.
Okay. Oftentimes, people who have what I call spontaneous experience on their own can be one of two things. And we, in our books, we do indeed warn against hypnotic regressions, because oftentimes when people are hypnotically regressed, two things happen. One, they're definitely on a different level linked forever to the hypnotist.
No.
Yes.
I wasn't...
I don't know. I'm just trying to explain what happens when people are hypnotized. The second thing is, oftentimes when people have some sort of experience while being hypnotized, they can be actual experiences of another life. You can be experiencing the what's known as the astral light or the Akashic record, which is a record that exists and records history, to put it simply, everything that happened on the planet since its beginning. And or you can be experiencing something that may have happened to you in another lifetime. The problem with many adults, and why we choose to cite the research of young children in our effort, is because adults have done a lot of reading. They've seen many, many movies, many shows, heard many songs, which conjure up images, as our earlier phone caller mentioned, the power of words themselves and sounds. And so it's very hard to really know for sure if that was an actual experience. It is said in our research that people, when the time is right, they will remember, just as indeed you may have. Remember when the time is right, what's called spontaneous recall. They will see their past.
He did ask me if I had anybody, any relative or anyone, and I do have an aunt that was a doctor in Russia, and why he put that together, associated it with me, I can't understand.
Maybe he's done some reading and has found out, as some of our research indicates, that oftentimes people reincarnate to areas where they have been before. And so maybe that's why he asked that.
But I had never, in my lifetime, I never even was in Russia.
No, I understand. I sincerely cannot say whether indeed it was a true experience, that you remembered a past life or not. And no one can actually do that except a true seer, such as an individual like an Ed Casey. There are very few true seers that can read the astral light and tell you for sure if that indeed was your experience in your last life. When you experience these recalls, as they may be, obviously they're happening maybe for a reason.
Does that help you a little?
Yes, it does somewhat.
All right.
Well, there's no way I can give you a confirmation.
Can you explain anything about reincarnation in your book? The Phoenix.
Yes, in both books we explain many incidences of reincarnation. In the Phoenix Fire Mystery,
I did get a booklet from Edgar Casey's foundation. I think they are selling your book.
Yes, they do. Indeed, they like our research very much.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But it does explain a lot of how reincarnation works. And it not only explains that, but it also explains how it's affected people's lives. Great people, musicians, poets, artists, musicians, anybody you can think of, poets, how these concepts have enriched and helped people's lives.
Also, there is a body of group, quite a group of people now that are involved in what we would call past life therapy.
Yes.
That we do carry over some physical and mental problems from previous lives. But you don't know about those problems until you delve into the previous life itself. And once you understand that, there is a body of evidence showing that that does work.
Well, what I can say is that the lessons that we need to learn are always before us, and that we always have to remember that we always have to exercise our free will and free choice. Predestination or fate isn't what people make it out to be. We determine our destinies, and we all have to remember that our lives can change in one moment by exercising our own free will, choice, and determination.
I'm glad to hear you say that, because some people say, oh, it was destined to be. Yeah.
No, I mean, there are...
Well, it's usually a script you wrote, hon.
Well, you know, many people say have in dreams, a lot of things can happen in dreams. There are many levels of dreams, and sometimes there are warning dreams.
No, there's a lot of that.
Yes, I've had that experience.
Yes, well, just consider yourself to have your experience. And some people don't understand, and many people are jealous and want to have it, too.
Lil, thank you very much for contributing tonight. We have two more hours to go with Kerry Williams tonight. Our subject is reincarnation, and the door is open. Get it out on your... Get it out. We're here for that. We'll be talking to Lance in just a moment after the news.
Each and every one of you do. And we donate them to libraries around the world, medical libraries as well as public libraries, to make these books available to people who cannot afford to buy them on their own. So my co-author and I call this a selfless work. Neither one of us take one penny from the assets of the royalties generated by the effort of writing these books.
So you've done a lot of research. You've written some very skilled books that have a lot of fruitful things in them. You sell them, and you don't keep any of the money.
No.
That's
but my co-author's
difficult.
Been doing this for over 25 years.
That's very difficult for people to understand, Carrie.
Yes, it is.
Why do you do that?
Well, we feel that the strength of the book comes in the ability to do it selflessly.
Mm-hmm.
And by being selfless and not doing it for the money generated by the book, it has maintained a magnificent service to humanity. It's a very hard subject to sell because we don't write about personal opinion or our own personal experiences, which a lot of people like to do. And books like this that are considered very scholarly or historical or factual don't stay in print. But we sincerely believe, because of our approach being correct, the books have remained in print. The Phoenix Fire Mystery came out in 1977. It's been in print all this time, except for a few months when the Phoenix, the Reincarnation and New Horizon came out. And indeed, now that the Horizon's been out 1 year, the Phoenix Fire Mystery is back into print and paperback to make it easier for everyone to buy. And in addition to that, we even drop our royalties and lower our amount that is received in order to make the price very, very low to people who want to buy them.
So you're trying to serve
it's a double-ended reason to try to make the book available, the information available, so people can grow and have more meaning to their lives.
In service to man.
Yes. And the bottom line is, we seek to help humanity.
Very good for you, Carrie. Let's go to Lance. We promised him about 10 minutes ago we'd get to him next, and Lance, we did not lie. We're here.
Hello.
Hi.
Yes, I had a few questions for your guest tonight.
Go ahead.
Well, to start off with, like, everybody is endowed with, you know, a spirit or some sort of a driving force that keeps that person alive, you know, continue to have the will to live and continue and whatnot. I was just curious, you know, when a person is near death, you know, or passes on to his maker, as the Judeo-Christians might say, do you have any inclination as far as what your beliefs are, what happens to that driving force that keeps that a person alive once the moment of death is incurred?
I understand. You said everyone is endowed with a spirit. I'd like to say that we're really all divine. Each and every one of us has a potential of becoming a living God, as great as a Jesus the Christ or a Buddha or anyone else.
Or the creator of the universe. We are
right. Actually
a part of that.
Yes. But as far as your next question is, what happens to all of this at death?
Yes. All this living energy, what happens to it?
It's transformed. It says that the reason why bodies grow old and we age is because of the resistance of the life force flowing through us. Like a capacitor in a light bulb, you know how filament gives light because of the electricity flowing through it? Well, it's the same principle as life. We have the life force or the life principle flowing through us, which is indeed very electromagnetic, and our physical body eventually wears out because of the resistance of this life force flowing through us. At that time, our lower principles, which is the physical body, as part of it, dies, or what appears to be dead, freeing the higher principles that are a part of ourselves to go on and experience other planes of existence. Do you understand that? There's a part of us that lives in both the physical world and the non-physical world, the visible or the invisible. And that is called the soul in many religions. That part goes on and keeps experiencing. It has its own consciousness. And the people who have experienced that here in life are the people who've had what's known as near-death experiences. They have all had this very unique experience with full consciousness of realizing they are not their physical bodies, that their consciousness, their ability to see and hear, can function without a physical body. Do you understand that?
Yes. Do you also believe that this driving force can manifest itself in other beings, or like some people say, you may have this energy show up in another person. You know?
Okay, what you're talking about is
walk-ins.
Well, walk-ins or being possessed. Is that what you're talking about?
Well, yes. I mean, you may have some character traits of another person.
Okay,
you know?
You are your own individuality.
Right.
There's nothing stronger than you that is in your own body. But that link between, let's say, your higher self and your physical body can be weakened. And that, there's interesting experiences that happen. Sometimes people who do too many drugs have a loosening of that. People who drink. In our book, Phoenix Fire Mystery and the New Horizon, we cite a case of a Sergeant George Ritchie who was pronounced dead for 9 minutes. It's very nice for us and for him that he was in the Army. So
right.
It's a government document. And while he was dead, or pronounced dead for these 9 minutes, he left his body and was taken on a celestial tour. On that tour, one of the places he was taken to was a bar. And when he entered the bar, he could see people sitting there drinking. And he, of course, was not in his physical body, but what's known as his astral body, which is ethereal, which can't be seen or touched by the ordinary human eye. And while he was watching these people drink, he saw what's called disincarnated entities diving in and out of the heads of the people who were drinking. Okay? Now, what happens when you drink, according to many schools of thought, is that you sever the connection between your astral and your physical body, your higher principles and your physical self. And when that state becomes weakened, it is possible for these disincarnated entities, which are hovering on what's called the astral plane, very close to Earth, they're earthbound, take an opportunity to prey on this weakened state.
Yes, it's like you're saying, like your body is your temple and any foreign substances that don't belong is sort of interfering with
this
processes, you know.
Would this same thing be true to someone who was on, like, cocaine or some of the drugs?
Any drug.
For instance, we notice quite often in cocaine users that there is a form of schizophrenia develops where there is just a sudden radical change in
yes.
the personality.
Yes.
We call it schizophrenia.
Yes, I know there's many schools of thought, including Freud, that really wanted to delve into this understanding of reincarnation, including Carl Jung, understood that we are more than just a physical person. Personally, I seem to feel that schizophrenia may at times be two personalities mm-hmm. occupying one person, one body.
Or maybe an interloper that gets in there for
yeah,
a minute.
Yeah, right, in and out. But the thing is, the only person who can take control of their body is the individual who owns it. And it takes a lot of work to undo that loosening that has occurred.
You can't get rid of them.
By a lot of work. A lot of
yeah.
people call, and it reminds me of sometimes the story of the Son of Sam, not to bring that up,
mm-hmm.
but he said, there are demons in my head making me do this. And very few people, you know, many people thought he was just crazy.
Didn't go well with the jury.
As a reincarnationist, who I believe and think that he indeed was telling the truth, that he was not totally under control of his own higher principles, and that somehow he got pervaded by entities that prey. In seances, which are very unsafe, the medium goes into a trance and is literally usually taken over by these disincarnate entities. That can mimic the astral light. People think they're talking to a deceased relative when it's nothing more than an astral shell playing games on the emotions of the people that are there.
Having fun with you because they have nothing else to do.
Well, they have a body to use. That's the point.
That's the point.
They wait for a human body to experience.
But we do have other examples, Lance, which I think are quite startling.
Yes.
There's a gentleman outside of Phoenix who was a lineman.
Uh-huh.
Working on high-tension lines. And he caught 33,000 volts.
And he lived to talk about it?
And, well, he not only lived to talk about it, he was a simple lineman. He did survive the shock, which was quite unusual. And as he got back into his life, he was a changed person altogether.
Mm-hmm.
And is today one of the leading theoretical physicists for NASA. And he never,
ever took physics courses in his life.
I was just curious about something before I go here. Like, everybody has, you know, free choice. He was stating something about Son of Sam, you know, trying to rationalize some of the things that he did. You know, everybody, according to the Christians, everybody has a free choice. You know, make decisions whether it's good or bad. And whatever you do is governed with what you think or how you have an outlook on life itself, you know.
Well, good or bad is a relative thing here.
Yes, we agree with the free choice.
Yes.
What did you want to say?
Well, I wanted to, you know, say as far as that goes, like, you know, what you do in this, you know, earth, you know, it's going to finally catch up to you sometime in the afterlife sometime.
Exactly. Well, not even in the afterlife, right here on earth. It says, as St. Paul said, brethren, be not deceived. God is not mocked. As a man soweth, so shall he also reap.
That's right.
That's what you do will come back to you. Which is in conflict, really, with the idea of vicarious atonement.
All right, comes around, goes around.
Exactly right.
You know, Justinian had a great problem with this.
Yeah.
He and his wife, Theodora, who was the great whore of Rome, had killed 600,000 people because they wouldn't be Christians.
It was Justinian who created the 13 anathemas.
Yes.
Who held the Pope hostage, who created the any preexistence of the soul, would be an anathema and eventually probably lead to death later on. And so Justinian, as you said, did indeed have a problem and really affected the whole course of Christianity today.
Yes, I mean, there's like...
One way to get rid of reincarnation was just to take it out of the books.
Yes.
And that basically is what
make it
did.
Anathema.
Yes,
right.
That's basically what it is.
Just like the Christians believe when you pass on from this earth, you get your reward in heaven.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they act like they say, if your name is not in the book of life, you know, you got no other choice but to go to the end of the world, as they say. You know, but it's practically the same thing, what you're saying.
I believe that the concept of heaven and hell, the counterpart, really doesn't exist. That there are stages in the after-death states which people have defined by their own experiences, which we cite through the work of many researchers such as Dr. Jan Stevenson, Dr. Moody, and many others, that have these experiences to help people understand that hell is a state of purgatory. The Bible talks about purgatory, you know, but it doesn't mean that it's an indefinite state. Once you go through that state and you shed your earthly attachments and get rid of all the earthly desires and things that could be very painful to let go of, you move on.
Right. That sounds like the Catholic doctrine. They have heaven, purgatory, limbo, and hell.
Well,
it gets confusing.
We say that everyone goes to heaven. Mm-hmm. No one is excluded.
You go where your consciousness takes you for the first trip out
right.
there.
Well, you create your after-death states, really, by the life you live.
Yeah, that's right.
Because
right.
The after-death states are an assimilation of your thoughts that you generated during life.
Right.
Does that help you, Lance?
Yes, that's right. Okay, thanks for talking to me.
All right.
Have a nice night.
Thank you for checking in. We're 21 minutes past 10 o'clock on this Saturday night. It's open mind. Saturday night, Kerry Williams is with me. We're talking about reincarnation, and while that was going on, we were just talking about the regression work that goes on. How valid is regression in your estimation, Kerry?
Well, we really don't estimate it, but we do investigate the research that investigates that information. And one of the leading researchers is Ian Stevenson. He's found out that people who go through hypnotic regression, oftentimes what's experienced, as I said earlier to one of the questioners, is that it can be colored by our daily reading, everything we've ever seen, television, movies, articles we've read,
pictures
of travel. But if it's not, then indeed it's an actual experience. I mean, we have a very good example that we all are aware of, our dear friend Shirley MacLaine, you know, spent a lot of effort to recall her past lives and has indeed remembered many of them. Now that she's gone through all the experience of remembering many of her past lives, she's at the point now where she says you have to be in the now.
That's right.
You know, so what good are all the details? When people ask me about hypnotic regression, wanting to know who they were, who their mother was, who their father was, who their boyfriend is, I say, tell me everything you did from the minute you were born till your first birthday. None of us can do that. So why clutter our minds with facts and details that are really irrelevant? Mahatma Gandhi taught that it's a blessing to forget, as did many others, that if we were to be caught up and cluttered with the facts and details of the last 100 or 500 incarnations here, we wouldn't be able to deal with now.
Yeah, of what value is it? I think probably it will come to you if there is some value in approving your life now.
Yes.
In some way.
Well, let's look at the example of Gautama Buddha. In the book, The Light of Asia, or the story of Siddhartha, that was a story of his life made into a film that probably many people have seen. He sat under the Bodhi tree and remembered his past 555 incarnations. Why? For one reason, to remain a loving, compassionate teacher. To realize that he made the same mistakes that each and every one of us make along the path of our evolution to this divine state that we're all capable of. At any time we choose to enter the path and become. The potential is there all the time. So the reason for recall is to remain compassionate and loving, not to judge or condemn anyone, because everything is a learning experience.
And an evolving experience.
An evolving experience.
Which is what it's all about.
Exactly.
To learn how to deal with energy is what it
yes.
basically gets
well,
out.
We are energy.
All right, Steve, you're on.
Good morning.
Hi.
Ms. Williams, General Patton believed very strongly in reincarnation. He believed he had fought under the Greeks, under the Romans, and you know that's why he felt so at home when he was out on the battlefields of Europe, because he felt he'd been there before and he believed he had been there before.
You're indeed correct, and we do cite some of his own words in both of our books.
Now, is it more rare than common that someone should be reincarnated and lead the same life again and again and again, as General Patton believed he had always been a warrior spirit?
Let's take your analogy of leading, being a general. People pick up where they left off. If you want to be a military career, you may pick up on a military career. If you want to be a Mozart, you'll continue in music. If you want to be a Picasso, you'll continue in art. These people, what's called genius or these child prodigies, as a reincarnation, so we state that they are just picking up where they left off. The skills and talents were acquired many lifetimes before, and it's an ever onward process. So if somebody felt an affinity for a military career, it would make sense, if we look at all the other examples, that they indeed would choose to come back if they could and pick up what was already a part of their repertoire, a skill already learned.
Uh-huh. And with all the emotional makeup of someone, let's say someone's a politician this life and let's say a working class person, you know, you go to a job every day. How about if the person, let's say for myself, I'd always believed I lived an earlier life. I believed the person who I was had not died peacefully. In other words, didn't die of old age in bed and such. I went to a medium, and they told me, I just asked them about a past life. And basically, the emotional makeup of this person, and in the past life, he said I was a woman. The emotional makeup of this person was exactly my emotional makeup at the time. I mean, if the person was, temperamental, it exactly the same, right down. It was so...
Are you saying that your emotional makeup today, now, in this life, is exactly the same as the person in your past life?
At the way he described it, the mood alterations, ups and downs, and totally exact. And plus the fact that, I had felt this person not die peacefully, and he also said that this person that I had been in this past life had been murdered. And I had told him nothing except tell me about the person who I had been before.
I understand. Phobias, young children that have phobias today, are manifesting fears that have maybe probably nothing to do with this lifetime at all. Fear of water, fear of heights could indeed have to do with something that happened in a previous life. I have to say to you and all other people who go to mediums that to find a very good medium is very, very hard. And my co-author and myself were in New York at the Americana Hotel doing a lecture, and there was a psychic fair going on simultaneously. We had one young man come up to us begging us to please tell him who he was in a previous life, because he had just been to a psychic that told him that he was a henchman for Hitler, and he was ready to kill himself right here on the spot. And we had to take him to someone who we felt could undo that harm and see the Akashic record clearly and help him understand that he went to three different psychics that day, and each one of them told him something else. But when somebody told him that he was Hitler's henchman, he was ready to believe that one.
Yeah.
You know, instead of what the other one said.
Taking the worst possible scenario.
Yeah,
a lot of people do that in life.
That's why we encourage people. It said we're our memory of our past lives is with us all the time, but hidden away and protected. There's a Greek myth that says we're bathed in the waters of Lethe, the river of forgetfulness, for a reason, so we can deal with the now. And when we are ready...